Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. How are you? I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're practicing. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. All right. Today, and I hope that you take the time. I know many of you follow. I try to do these broadcasts, these podcasts every day. But sometimes they don't happen daily for various reasons. But there are hundreds and hundreds of videos on this channel. And although I focused a lot in the recent year on Lotus Sutra, I mean, it is our Nichiren doctrine of understanding of the ultimate teachings of Shakyamuni as the Lotus Sutra. But it's also incredibly insightful to know Nichiren's writings, his Gosho, as it were. And his writings are full of scholarship and information, not just on the history of Buddhism, although it's really helpful for that, but it builds the knowledge base that you can follow throughout the teachings of Shakyamuni for 50 years, leading to the ultimate teachings of the Mahayana and the Lotus Sutra. If you practice for a month or a year or a decade or several decades, as I have and many of you have, you go through kind of a roller coaster of, man, this is an amazing practice, to, I'm not sure if it's working, to, oh man, this really, really changes life. And to, you know, we get, human beings, especially in the modern era, we get so, how do I say this? We get so desensitized to the amount of insights that we gain each day that we have such an expectation, like every day is a revolution in our thinking, that the one day that goes by where nothing seems to have just splattered us in the face, well, things aren't working. You know, we have this expectation of, you know, opening gifts every single day. And I would like to propose to you that pick up a book, a Gosho or an e-book, pick a page randomly and just read the page. You don't have to read the whole Gosho. And you'll find presence. You'll find insights. It never fails. No matter how many times you read somebody. If you look at all of my lectures on the Lotus Sutra, from the very first through all the translations and all the different ones that I've had, and a dozen of them, leading to ultimately my own annotated translation with influx of Nichiren insights into the Lotus Sutra, which I would propose for us is the most useful. Every time I've read it, a new ways of understanding, new insights, right? So for Nichiren, yes, I am getting back to topic. We are still dealing with, and will for a while, because there's a lot to go over in this book. It's a really good resource to keep at your side as you're reading different things about Buddhism. Because even the terminology, the words, change or evolve in their profundity of meaning, the way they tie many concepts together, don't really reveal themselves until later in the teachings. And for you and I, practitioners of Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra, to have a modern, full understanding of these terms as they're presented to us now, the easiest example is the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, which to anyone who begins practicing Nichiren it might as well be calculus, right? It just seems so. But the fact of the matter is that it's a natural deepening of understanding of the very same things that were in the early teachings of the Nidana, It's just a more granular look. And if you've read Vasubandhu at all, you know what I mean by granular, or Nagarjuna for that matter, right? And since we're on the topic of scholarship, brilliant segue, we're talking about Nichiren, and Nichiren, Japanese, was very influenced by these schools in Japan. When he joined the monastic community at age 12, he immediately started studying all of Buddhist scholarship, right? And he had a teacher that he talks about in the Gosho, which is why I brought up the Gosho, who was a Tendai monk, who was his teacher. And as you know, or if you don't know, much of Nichiren's doctrine is an evolution, a further scholarship of Chinese scholarship from the 6th century, from Ziyi or Zhangran. Well, Ziyi was the school, created the school on the mountain Tendai, and Tendai in China was the source, the center for this this brilliant scholastic effort. But we owe a lot to Chinese scholarship and their way of organizing things, because after Shakyamuni died, everything was oral and spread orally. And over hundreds of years in India, in northeast India, in the Gandhara region, and I've talked about this book before, talks about a lot of translations into, you name it, Sanskrit dialects, Pali, Gandhari languages specific to the area. Gandhara was an intellectual center, and certainly for Buddhism. And a lot of well-to-do, not necessarily scholars, but the elite, the wealthy, right? The big class or caste differences, and the Brahmin caste, they hired transcribers to take these oral teachings and write them down, because there's always been this fear in Buddhism that the teachings would be lost, right? So they would write them down and transcribe into different languages, like I said, even their own script in Gandhara, and fold them up and put them in big clay pots and bury them, like for the future, right? And that book is about the archaeological finds and the miscellaneous collections where a lot of these pots were unearthed, which is fairly recent history. So it's kind of exciting. At any rate, in China, because India lost its scholarship of Buddhism, it really moved to China for many, many centuries. And in the 6th century, this scholar, Ziyi, or Chiche, I don't know why he has so many pronunciations or variations on his name. It's probably a language or cultural thing. But at any rate, he classified all the teachings into a proper order, like you would go to first grade before you go to second grade and third grade and so, right? He put them in an order, classified them into different periods of teachings when paradigm shifts really moved in the teachings, where they were continuously developing the capacity of the students, the monks. And he was responsible for that. And he, in his scholarship, showed the obviousness of the Lotus Sutra as the culmination and the central teaching that Shakyamuni was in his entire 50-year span of life teaching. Anyway, all of this is to get to Japan. And there was one scholar in particular, Miao Lo in China, but there was this slow movement from China to, right, Korea, and then Japan, southern Japan, and then all of Japan. And Saicho was a Japanese Buddhist who investigated this particular scholarship, deeply, and in fact, created an ordination platform based on ZE, Tendai, Chinese scholarship, Buddhism. This was hundreds of centuries later, right? And it was around the 9th century. He established the ordination platform at Mount Hiei in Japan. Posthumously, unfortunately, he didn't see this honorific until after his death, but he was given the name Dengyo. Now, that name you have undoubtedly heard, and it figures very strongly in Nichiren's national identity. Nichiren, very much Japanese, very much living under the shogunate, a very nationalistic, militaristic government. Yeah. Many of Nichiren's followers, adherents, students were samurai. And he would indicate Dengyo, amongst others, as his great anchor, if you will, for Japanese identity in the Tendai Lotus Sutra Buddhist milieu, the scholarship of Lotus Sutra. Not to take anything away from Zhiyi in China, but to use an authentic Japanese voice to say, yeah, there is agreeance here that this Lotus Sutra Buddhism is the ultimate teaching of Shakyamuni. Now, Nichiren, very well read, cites sources from China, India, Japan, history, all over the place. So he's by no means a blinded Japanese Buddhist. He's an amazing scholar. But Dengyo figures very much in the lineage of Nichiren's doctrine. So, in Buddhism Reference, we have an entry for Dengyo Saisho. Now, this is by no means an exhaustive research on Dengyo Saisho, but it does have quite a bit of information. We're going to get into it. And it's a helpful piece of history as a reference for our understanding of Nichiren doctrine. But he'll drop a lot of wisdom from this connection in his Gosho. All right? So without further blah, blah, blah. How many minutes have I got going? Yeah. Here we go. Dengyo or Saisho. One in the important lineage of Nichiren's influences in his studies at Mount Hiei, Saisho is often quoted throughout Nichiren's writings on the teachings of the Lotus Sutra. Saisho, born on September 15th, 767, and passed away in June of 822, was a Japanese Buddhist monk credited with founding the Tendai school of Buddhism based on the Chinese Tendai school. He was exposed to during his trip to Tang China, beginning in 804. He founded the temple and headquarters of Tendai at Enryaku-ji on Mount Hiei near Kyoto. He is also said to have been the first to bring tea to Japan. After his death, he was awarded the posthumous title of Dengyo Daishi. Now, don't be confused if you're thinking of going to Japan today and going to Great Tendai Temple and so forth. The Tendai sect is not now what it used to be. And Nichiren talks a lot about this in his writings, yes? His early life, Saisho, was born in the year 767 in the city of Omi in present Shiga Prefecture with the given name of Hirono. According to his family tradition, Saisho's ancestors were descendants of emperors of Eastern Han China. However, no positive evidence exists for this claim. The region where Saicho was born did have a large Chinese immigrant population, so Saicho likely did have Chinese ancestry. During Saicho's time, the Buddhist temples in Japan were officially organized into a national network of known as the provincial temple system. And at the age of 13, Saicho became a disciple of one Gyokyo. He took tonsure as a novice monk at the age of 14 and was given the ordination name Saicho. Gyokyo, in turn, was a disciple of Dwokshan, Dosen in Japanese. Dosen, you might recall that name, and you'll see it in his writings. A prominent monk from China of the Tendai school who had brought the East Mountain teaching of Chan Buddhism, Huayan teaching, and the Bodhisattva precepts from Brahmajala Sutra to Japan in 736 and served as the precept master for ordination prior to the arrival of Jianchen. By age of 20, he undertook Saicho, the full monastic precepts as the Todaiji, at the Todaiji, thus becoming a fully ordained monk in the official temple system. A few months later, he abruptly retreated to Mount Hiei for an intensive study and practice of Buddhism, though the exact reason for his departure remains unknown. Shortly after his retreat, he composed his Ganmon, or Saicho's prayer, or meditation, which included his personal vows to these five vows. 1. So long as I have not attained the stage where my six faculties are pure, I will not venture out into the world. Now, we've studied about these six faculties, right? They come up a lot in the Lotus Sutra. They're the skandhas plus the mind, which are deluded by samsaric tendency, yeah? Samsara. So until he purifies those, he's not going to venture out into the world. He's incomplete in his mind, yeah? 2, so long as I have not realized the absolute, I will not acquire any special skills or arts like medicine, divination, calligraphy, musical instruments, any of those things, right? And those are important in ancient cultures because they extend the development of one's mind, spirit, thinking, right? This is why, in the West, we hear these things, practitioner of many but master of none, or some version of that, right? Have many skills, but you're not a master of any. Whereas in the East, to be considered a master is to have great skills in a variety of things, because that demonstrates your mastery of everything. It's interesting, isn't it? 3, so long as I have not kept all the precepts purely, I will not participate in any lay donors' Buddhist meetings. So until I've mastered my mind, my samsaric existence in this Saha world, I'm not going to drop in on laymen and laywomen and practicing and asking questions about Buddhism. Why do you think that is? He wouldn't want to mislead someone in the most important endeavor of life, right? Realizing Buddhahood. 4, so long as I have not attained wisdom, literally hanya, I will not participate in worldly affairs unless it be to benefit others. So there's a nod to Bodhisattva, right? I won't keep myself from assisting others, but at the same time, I won't endeavor to be their, quote, teachers, the leading them, until I am perfected in knowledge, right? Buddha wisdom. And 5, may any merit from my practice in the past, present, and future be given not to me, but to all sentient beings, so that they may attain supreme enlightenment. Any headway that I make as a, quote, teacher or facilitator or assist to others, any merit or value should not be directed to me, but in other words, to the teachings themselves as they are gestate and are ingested and produce insights in all of those for whom it is created value. In time, Saicho attracted other monks, both on Mount Hiei and from the Buddhist community in Nara, and a monastic community developed around Mount Hiei, which eventually became Enryaku-ji. Saicho was said to have carved an image of the Baishrajya Guru and enshrined it. Additionally, he lit a lamp of oil before the Buddha and meditated, prayed that the lamp would never be extinguished. This lamp is now known as the Fumetsu no Hoto, the inextinguishable Dharma lamp, and has remained lit for 1,200 years. The capital of Japan has moved from Nara to Nagagoka-kyo in 784, and then to Kyoto in 795. Because Mount Hiei was coincidentally located to the northeast of Kyoto, a direction considered dangerous according to Chinese geomancy, Saicho's presence on the mountain was thought to protect the new capital and brought him to the attention of the court. Interesting. Saicho and his community on Mount Hiei also started to correspond and exchange ceremonies with the established communities in Nara, in addition to the monks at the court, further enhancing his prestige. We often talk about being in rhythm with the universe, as it were. But this is simply to say that if we're practicing consistently and aligning our life experience with the momentum of life itself, then of course we're going to be aligned with the momentum that is the engine of life. So seemingly, we will find ourselves in fortuitous circumstance, but it's just obvious that that would happen, yeah? One of Saicho's earliest supporters in the court was Wakeno Hiroyo, who invited Saicho to give lectures at Takao-san-ji, along with 14 other eminent monks. Saicho was not the first to be invited, indicating that he was still relatively unknown to the court, but rising in prominence. Now I have a little area of tripping. Yeah, we'll take it. We got time. Saicho is known for having introduced tea to Japan. The success of the Takayusanji lectures, plus Saicho's association with Wakeno Hiroyo, soon caught the attention of Emperor Kanmu, who consulted with Saicho about propagating his Buddhist teachings further and to help bridge the traditional rivalry between the East Asian Yogacara and East Asian Madhyamaka schools, right? You might recognize the Madhyamaka as a founder of name Nagarjuna, right? Although I'm sure this is many centuries later, so how it developed in Japan, I'm not sure. Yogacara being a competing scholarship way back in the day, right? The emperor granted a petition by Saicho to journey to China to further study Tendai doctrine in China and bring back more texts. So rather than being a supplicant to the emperor and saying, well, I'll just suck up to Sanmu and give him what he wants to hear, like so many other leaders do, right? He was wanting further scholarship, tracing the roots of Tendai. Saicho was expected to only remain in China for a short time. However, Saicho could read Chinese but was unable to speak it at all. Thus, he was allowed to bring a trusted disciple along named Gishin, who apparently could speak Chinese. Gishin would later become one of the head monks of the Tendai order after Saicho. Saicho was part of the four-ship diplomatic mission to Tang China in 803. The ships were forced to turn back due to heavy winds, where they spent some time at Daizaifu, Fukuoka. During this time, Saicho likely met another passenger, Kukai, a fellow Buddhist monk, who was sent to China on a similar mission, though he was expected to stay much longer. When the ships set sail again, two sank during a heavy storm, but Saicho's ship arrived at the port of Ningbo, then known as Mingzhou, in northern Xinjiang in 804. Shortly after arrival, permission was granted for Saicho and his party to travel to Tendai Mountain, and he was introduced to the seventh patriarch of Tendai, Dao Sui, who became his primary teacher during the time in China. Dao Sui was instrumental in teaching Saicho about Tendai methods of meditation, monastic discipline, and orthodox teachings. Saicho remained under his instruction for approximately 135 days. Saicho spent the next several months copying various Buddhist works with the intention of bringing them back to Japan with him. While some works existed in Japan already, Saicho felt that they suffered from copyist errors. Oh man, how often do I talk about that, yeah? Or other defects, and so he made fresh copies. Once the task was completed, Saicho and his party returned to Ningbo, but the ship was harbored in Fuzhou at the time and would not return for 6 weeks. During this time, Saicho went to Yuzhou, modern-day Shaoxing, and sought out text and information on Vajrayana, or esoteric Buddhism. The Tendai school originally only utilized mixed, or zomitsu, ceremonial practices, but over time, esoteric Buddhism took on a greater role. By the time Saicho had arrived in China, a number of Tendai Buddhist centers provided esoteric training, and both Saicho and Gishin received initiation at a temple in Yue Prefecture. However, it's unclear what transmission or transmissions they received. Some evidence suggests that Saicho did not receive the dual Ryobu transmissions of the Diamond Realm and the Womb Realm. Instead, it is thought he may have only received the Diamond Realm transmission, but the evidence is not conclusive one way or the other. Finally, on the 10th day of the 5th month of 805, Saicho and his party returned to Ningbo, and after compiling further bibliographies, boarded the ship back for Japan and arrived in Tsushima on the 5th day of the 6th month. Although Saicho had only stayed in China for a total of 8 months, his return was eagerly awaited by the court in Kyoto. Shall I save the next for part two? All right. The next part is the founding of Tendai. Let's just keep going. On the return from China, Saicho worked hard to win recognition from the court, and in the first months of 806, Saicho Tendai Lotus School, or the Tendai Hokeshu, won official recognition when the court of the ailing emperor Kanmu issued another edict, this one permitting two annual ordinands, or Nenbundosha, for Saicho's new school on Mount Hiei. This edict states that following Saicho's request, the ordinands would be divided between two curricula, the Shannago course, centering on the study of the Mahavajracana Sutra. This was the Mikyo curriculum, Shana being the abbreviation for Birushana, the Japanese transliteration of Vajracana, and the Shinkango course, based on the study of Myoho Chikwan, the Lotus Sutra. This seminal work of Tendai's patriarch Chi, on the right page, yeah, Chi, 538 to 597. This was the Tendai curriculum, Shikan being the Japanese reading of Chi's central practice of Chikwan, cessation and contemplation. Kinkairon Engi. Thus, from its very inception, the Tendai Lotus School was equally based on Mikyo and Tendai. It was a subdivision of Saicho's new school that Mikyo's first received the official acknowledgement of the imperial court and became a proper subject of study in Japanese Buddhism. In 813, Saicho composed the Eihyo Tendaishu, which argues that the principal Buddhist masters of China and Korea all relied on Tendai doctrine in composing their own works. By identifying numerous references to and quotes from Tendai treatises in the works of Chichang of the Sanlun school, Chichao of the Faxiang school, Fa Xiang of the Huayan school, Yi Xing of Mikyo, and other prominent teachers, Saicho asserted that Tendai formed the foundation for all major Buddhist schools in Eastern Asia. Before Saicho, all monastic ordinations took place at Todaiji Temple under the ancient Vinaya Code, but Saicho intended to found his school as a strictly Mahayana institution and ordain monks using the Bodhisattva precepts only. See how important he is to us and to Nichiren? Despite intense opposition from the traditional Buddhist schools in Nara, his request was granted by Emperor Saga in 822, several days after his death. This was the fruit of years of effort and a formal debate. And this is when he was given the honorific Dengyo, right? So that's, again, it's a very brief history of Dengyo Saicho, but nonetheless, it's included in the Buddhist reference because not only is he discussed many times in the Gosho, but you can see how formative he was to the later schools of Japan, and certainly, without a doubt, to Nichiren, right? Not only for his bringing of the Tendai scholarship to Japan, his connection to China, for his insistence that the proper practice of Buddhism was Mahayana, number one, and number two, that he set up the first ordination platform precept on the Bodhisattva precepts as the way to practice. Now, this Dengyo predates the Mapo era, but just so. And Nichiren, you will see in his Gosho, will quote different excerpts from Dengyo, where he specifically says that we are on the cusp of the latter day, and as such, people will be present in this latter day to understand and take up this practice, right? So a brilliant introduction and a link in the chain of lineage directly to Nichiren. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you got something out of it. Again, it's not a full history. You can do your own deep dives if you like, but that's why it's included in Buddhism Reference, just as a one of those links that ties our scholarship together. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your practice. Thank you greatly for your support, whether it's liking and subscribing, which only takes a few seconds. It does a tremendous amount to providing this resource to more people, expanding our Sangha. It's a Bodhisattva act right there. Don't forget, the podcasts are free, so you can get audio podcasts. The website full of free information, but also the e-books or the print books that I've put out over the years and recently. That's a tremendous source of support. And as is buying a Nichiren inscribed or digital copy of a Nichiren inscribed mandala for correct practice. And patrons through Patreon or direct to PayPal. Namo Myo Rengeko. You guys, all great Bodhisattva efforts. Thank you so much. Please take care of your health. Keep your practice strong. And I will see you in the next one. All right? Bye for now.